ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 ॐ नमो भगवते
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila Chapter 8 Talks Between the Lord and Ramananda Rai Text 254 Sarvata Jijibe Kartabya Kaha Bash
Sarvata Jijibe Kartabya Kaha Bash
Vraja Bhumi Vrindavana Jaha Lila Rash
Vraja Bhumi Vrindavana Jaha Lila
Sarvata jijibe kartabya kaha bash
Sarvata jijibe kartabya kaha bash
Vraja bhumi vrindavana jaha lila rash
Vraja bhumi vrindavana jaha lila rash
Sarvata jijibe kartabya kaha bash
Sarvata jijibe
Vraja Bhumi Vrindavana Jaha Lila Raj
Vraja Bhumi Vrindavana Jaha Lila Raj
Translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, Where should the living entity live, abandoning all other places? Ramananda Rai replied, He should live in the holy place known as Vrindavan or Vraja Bhumi, where the Lord performed his rasa dance. Purport. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 47, Text 61, Asamaho charanare nujusham aham syam Vrindavane kimapi gulma latoshadhinam Yadushjajam svajanam aryapatang chahitva Bhijur Mukunda Padavim Shuti Bhir Vimigram. Uddhava said, Let me become one of Vrindavan's herbs and plants that are trampled by the gopis who gave up all connections with family and friends and decided to worship the lotus feet of Mukunda. Those lotus feet are sought by all great saintly persons expert in the study of Vedic literature. Continuing our discussion of the propriety of Krishna's Rasa Lila. that to some it seems immoral. They would prefer to worship Lakshmi Narayana. Of course, there is also a tradition, at least I know in the Telugu language, this Annamacharya has composed many bhajans describing the intimate conjugal affairs of Lakshmi and Narayana, but they are, after all, conjugal. That means between husband and wife. The whole scene in Vrindavan, the whole atmosphere is quite different. Of course, in Vaikuntha, the Lord is not only acting as a big boss, but he's very kind to all the devotees, and he has a friendly relationship with some of his servants, but it's always marked. It's that friendship is always qualified by the fact that Narayana is known to be supreme. So even though some of his servants, they're allowed to have a somewhat friendly relationship, there is maryada. Maryada, that word is often translated into English as etiquette, but it literally means a limit. You should know your limits. Don't go beyond your limits. Know your position. It's not all the same. It's not socialism. It's not egalitarian. There's one wife. She can be very close with him. No one else. It's not allowed. In Dwarka, there is, it's closer still. Just in Tirupati, I was given the verse to speak on. From the, what was that? From the 11th canto of demigods approaching Krishna in Dwarka and joking with him. They can do so to some extent. And Krishna shows his respect in Dwarka to his parents, to his grandparents, to all the senior, his fathers-in-law, whichever ones may be there. But still, it's clear he is on top. He's the Supreme Lord. However, in Vrindavan, that situation is usually not there. In Vrindavan, people see Krishna as just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was discussing with Vallabha Bhatta. Vallabha Bhatta, one time, and they discussed many times, one time Vallabha Bhatta said that I have written about the names of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I only accept two names, Shama Sunda and Yashoda Nandana. Of course, there are so many other names, but in this particular instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to emphasize these Vrindavan names of Krishna. Of course, Krishna may also be known as Shama Sunda outside Vrindavan. But particularly in Vrindavan, his beauty is emphasized, and that the fact that he's the son of Mother Yashoda, the darling child. Krishna famously says, Ye yata mangrapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajamiham. Everyone, as they approach me, I reciprocate with them accordingly. So how far does that go? Well, most people approach God with awe and reverence. That's the proper way to approach God. and therefore, they can worship him as Lakshmi Narayana, or if they have some special taste, they can worship him as Lakshmi Narsingha, or Sita Ram, or the various avatars, Varaha, Matsya. They can worship him in these various forms. But Krishna says, Yayata Mang, unto me. Who is that me who is speaking this? This is Krishna standing before Arjuna, who is the intimate friend of Krishna. So Arjuna would relate with Krishna as a friend. He would eat with him, bhojaneshu, shayaneshu. He would lie on the, you could imagine they'd lie on the same bed together, maybe after taking their lunch, and then they may be joking with each other. Hey Yadava, oh Yadava, you're just a Yadava. We're Kurus, we're much superior to you. That consciousness there, making some joke like this. So Krishna reciprocates. He reciprocates with that. He doesn't send a thunderbolt and zap Arjuna and reduce him to ashes. But he accepts. He accepts an inferior position to Yudhishthira Maharaj, a socially inferior position. And this intimacy that comes treating Krishna as a person, not as God. this reaches its zenith in Vrindavan. So God is a person. If we accept that God is a person, is he God first or is he a person first? What does that mean? Because he's always God and he's always a person. So what does it mean? What's his identity? Well, it's something like this. If the president of the country, is he the president first or he's a person first? Well, to most of the people of the country, his identity is as the president. They relate to him as the president. But for those who are very personally close to him, his being the president is not very important. They know him and reciprocate with him for what he is. Even before he was the president, they were friends with him or relatives of him. and their relationship, someone who's very close, their relationship doesn't change because someone gets a big position. So Krishna, to himself, he's a person first and God second. But in the eyes of the world, he's God first and, oh, all right, he's a person. All right, okay. All right, so he's a person, but he's God, so we should worship him. All right, that's the proper way to reciprocate with such a person. But he has feelings, likes, dislikes, friends, enemies. Well, in this world people have enemies, but Krishna doesn't have enemies. He doesn't make enemies, although some people, of their own bad choice, they choose to be his enemies. So Krishna is, he's the supreme, so he's the supreme sweet, the supreme beautiful, must be. So if someone is attracted to his sweetness, will he not reciprocate with that? If someone is attracted to his beauty, will he not reciprocate with that? Someone in the government might be very handsome, or nowadays they have women, ministers and all, this might be very beautiful. So if you, someone is introduced, this is the foreign secretary or whatever. Oh, very beautiful. You're not supposed to say that. She might be very beautiful. Do you have a foreign secretary in this country? Such a thing. Minister of External Affairs, maybe they call it that. Might be very beautiful, but that's not what you're supposed to be reciprocating with. But if so, it becomes embarrassing. People feel very embarrassed. What are you talking about him being very beautiful and very sweet? Okay, he's beautiful and sweet, but he's God. Just remember it. No, no, I want to remember. I want to play with him. So this apparent incompatibility is treated very nicely in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami. When Gopa Kumar went to Vaikuntha, and it was embarrassing for the residents of Vaikuntha that he was so close, so desirous of an intimate relationship with Narayana. So Krishna says he reciprocates. So if someone approaches him with love, being attracted to his beauty and his sweetness, then Krishna reciprocates. Of course, one has to become qualified to do that. It's not that anyone, that there's a beautiful foreign secretary, it's not that anyone can just walk up and say, oh, you're so beautiful. In fact, in the capacity of foreign secretary, there's no scope for that whatsoever. It's only in a very private setting. So actually, Vrindavan is very private, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed it to the world, but still the world largely doesn't understand it. That's why we have to do lots of chanting and dancing in public, so people can become purified, and they also can become qualified to relish the mellows of Vrindavan. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami, speaking about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, especially the pastimes with the gopis, he states, Rinam Nishreya Sarthaya Vyakti Bhagavato Nripa Avyayasya Pameyasya Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha. The Supreme Lord is inexhaustible, avyaya, and immeasurable, aprameya. Oh, I didn't say that properly. Avyasya prameyasya. He's inexhaustible and immeasurable. He's nirguna, he's not touched by the modes of material nature, because he is their controller. So he is, it's a brief description of God, who's above everything of this world. He's beyond measurement, he's beyond the modes of this world, he's inexhaustible, he's a, a different entity to anything of this material world, completely above it, yet he personally appears in this world for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. Yeah, please fix that door so we don't get the disturbance. If possible, you can do that. So what is that highest benefit? Is it morality? Well, if it's morality, then maybe Buddha would be good enough. Or Rama is... But the highest benefit, Nishrayasa, the highest benefit is not morality. As the atheist Richard Dawkins, his standard reply to the accusation that without religion we cannot have a standard of morality, he says, well, we can work it out ourselves, a standard of morality. We don't need any religion to do that. That's arguable. It is arguable. I don't agree with that, but it is arguable. But what then is the highest benefit? Why does Krishna come? I mean, what's the need for him to come? He already came as Rama to show morality. And Buddhism is practically the basis for the common man is to lead a moral life, and that's already there in the Dharma Shastras. So what is the need for Krishna to come? Why does Shukadev say this just before the Gopi Leela, just before he starts describing, well, the Gopi Leela is there before describing the Rasa Leela? Why is that? When Krishna himself says that he comes, yada yada hi dharmasya glarne bhavati bharata, abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shujamiham, whenever there's a decline in dharma, then Krishna comes and restores it. So, why does Shukadev say this just before the Gopi Leela begins, which might appear to be immoral, it might be to be against the principles of dharma, but no, this is the highest dharma. Krishna comes to show the highest, purest, most intimate love of himself. He doesn't do that himself because he is himself, but he does that via his devotees. And later he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to do this. And after 12 years in Vrindavan, he left and then he went to Mathura and then to Dwaraka and various places. And he lived after marrying Rukmini and subsequently 16,107 other queens. He lived the life of an ideal moral grihastha. But in his Vrindavan Leela, he simply showed what is the bliss of not having to follow morality, to be free. People want to be free, free of all rules, but you can't be. But Krishna can be. The only rule he has is that he is under the control of his devotees' love. And that's not even, it's just a fact that he has to live with. He's very happy to live with that. So then Shukadev goes on to discuss about the Rasa Leela. Yesterday we read that verse, how Krishna, the gopis, they were singing various songs about Krishna, and then Tasam Avirabhut Chauri. Then Shauri, the Krishna, he appeared in the midst of them, Pitambara Dhara Shragvi, Sakshad, Manmata Manmataha. He appeared with dressed in yellow cloth, his typical yellow cloth, wearing a garland of forest flowers. Directly the attractor, he's the Manmata, or the one who churns the mind of Manmata, of Cupid. So the one who is here, who himself bewilders everyone, Krishna bewilders him. So that's how he appeared. And the scene is set up for the Rasa Leela. They're all there, they're all ready to dance. They all know what they came for. But there is some discussion before that begins. Krishna was playing his flute in the forest. The gopis dropped whatever they were doing. Some of them were boiling milk. Some of them were feeding their family members. Some of them were feeding the breast milk to their babies. Some of them, they were dressing up. They forgot what they were doing, and they put their lower cloth on their upper body and their upper cloth on their lower body, and they all ran to Krishna, ignoring the protests of their husbands, fathers-in-law, brothers, and other elderly family members. So Krishna, the first thing he spoke to the gopis was about morality, proper dharma. He said to them, this night is quite frightening, and frightening creatures are lurking about. At night in the forest, it's very dangerous. There may be lions, tigers, bears, snakes, scorpions, all kinds of dangerous creatures. What to speak of ghosts move around at night. Krishna says, this night is quite frightening, and frightening creatures are lurking about. Rakshasas, return to Raja. He told them, gave them a straightforward order, which they didn't follow. This is not a proper place for women. Not finding you at home, your mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands are certainly searching for you. Don't cause anxiety for your family members. Now you have seen this Vrindavan forest full of flowers and resplendent with the light of the full moon. You have seen the beauty of the trees with their leaves trembling in the gentle breeze coming from the Yamuna. Okay, now you came, you saw the forest, it's very nice, okay. You had a nice view of the forest. So now go back to the cowherd village. Don't delay. Oh, chaste ladies, serve your husbands and children and calves. Then Krishna, having spoken on proper dharma or morality, changed the tune a little bit, well, quite considerably, and spoke on the platform of pure love, which was why the gopis had come to Krishna, not to see the they hadn't come to see the forest, they'd come to see Krishna. So he spoke to them. On the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part, since all living entities possess natural affection for me. All right, so that's very good. You love me, you came to me. However, Krishna continues, going back to proper morality, the highest religious duty for a woman is to sincerely serve her husband, behave well toward her husband's family, and take good care of her children. Women who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards. For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. Transcendental love for me arises by the devotional processes of hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating on me, and faithfully chanting my glories. The same result is not achieved by mere physical proximity, so please go back to your homes. In Krishna book, commenting on this, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna's instruction to the gopis, it's actually true. What he's saying, it's not just he's saying this as a joke, that this is the proper behavior for a woman. But there is the notable exception in the case of the gopis. Otherwise, it's true. So the gopis, what are they going to do? Well, the wives of the brahmanas performing yajnas, they were in a very similar situation to the gopis. They said, we don't want to go back home, we'll just remain in the forest. And if you don't accept us, then we'll just remain as some vagabond women in the forest. We don't care. just to, so we can have you. But Krishna replied, no, better you go back. He said, okay, we'll go. But the gopis, they weren't going to have anything of it. They did their savadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. This was their moment. They could choose to follow all the dharmas as Krishna recommended, or just surrender to him utterly. So that's what they did. They responded, "Our dear Krishna, as an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid." See, now they're arguing with him on the basis, just like Arjuna argued, but this time the gopis won, not Arjuna. "We agree that this principle is valid, but actually this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are their most intimate relative, and indeed their very self. Expert transcendentalists always direct their affection toward you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. What use do we have for these husbands, children, and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? Therefore, O Supreme Controller, grant us your mercy. O Lotus-Eyed One, do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association." So the gopis, they were the topmost devotees. They were practicing always the principle of smartavya satatang Vishnu, vismartavya na jatuchit, always thinking of Vishnu and never forgetting him. They particularly meditated upon him as their husband. After the Kartik Vrata is over, which just began yesterday, then there's the celebration of the Katyayani Vrata. The gopis in the cold of Vrindavan performing austerities so they can get Krishna as a husband. But even though it comes after the Kartik, in which they actually dance with Krishna, that actually came in time, chronologically before that. So Krishna told them in his, there's another one which moralistic people don't like. Krishna stole their clothes. And then Krishna said, "All right, so you want me as your husband? Okay, so it will be." And Krishna fulfilled their desires in the Rasa-lila when he performed or danced with them very intimately. So it's a fact that if we want to understand Krishna's lila by standards of worldly morality, it's not possible. It's not explainable to people who are stuck on the platform of morality. That if we tell them there's something higher than this, it's very difficult to they can't catch it. That's why traditionally in India, this could be researched, but I'm pretty sure prior to the arrival of the British, who were determined to find out all kinds of faults, real and imagined, with everything Indian, to undermine the confidence of the Indian people in themselves, so the British could rule them. Prior to the British making an issue of Krishna's so-called immorality, the Indian people, even without trying to intricately to understand the philosophical intricacies, they just accepted, yes, this is Krishna, it's on a different level. That's all. They didn't try to justify, they just accepted it. Tiji asang na doshaya. That's the principle stated in the Bhagavata. For those who are powerful, there's no fault. They can do things which ordinary people can't do, and they won't be affected. So, Krishna, the great dancer, and one of the qualities, I believe Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out, one of the unlimited qualities of Krishna is that he's very kind, especially to women. So, if you really want to get Krishna's mercy, you can be a woman. And we find that the sages of Dandakaranya, they also wanted to become women. Krishna, he sped Kaliya, even though Kaliya had caused so much disturbance to his devotees. He spared him from death by the intercessionary prayers of the wives of Kaliya, who were all great devotees, and Krishna was very compassionate to Kaliya by dancing on his head. So he's very merciful. This Ras Leela should also be seen as a symbol of Krishna's mercy. Krishna comes to out of this world. He comes into this world, sambhavami atma mayaya. He appears in this world out of his own maya. Maya in this context can be understood to be his mercy. And we learned all about this, whatever we know about Krishna and Krishna's Rasa-lila and everything about Krishna. We learned this by the mercy of Krishna, which was manifested as Krishna Kripa Srimurti, the very form of Krishna's mercy, the spiritual master of the universe, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, who he, on arriving in America, seeing the situation and how it looks completely hopeless, how on earth can these people even begin to understand anything about Krishna consciousness? But he prayed that to Krishna, he made his poem on the dock in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. He, just on arrival, he said a prayer to Krishna, O Lord, I'm just like a puppet in your hands. So if you have brought me here to dance, then make me dance, make me dance. Na chao, na chao. O Lord, make me dance as you like. So Krishna's representative, Srila Prabhupada, he came to the Western countries and taught a religion of chanting and dancing. Of course, that's also there. There are the whirling dervishes, which are a branch of the, or type of, yeah, how are you going to translate? You know that? These dervish, that's the English word, comes from darabish. Daravish, that word comes up in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Sanatan Goswami is described looking like a daravish. So there's these Sufis, they go round and round and round and round again and again and again and again. They go with some music. It's not very Islamic, according to Islamic purists. They probably get their head chopped off if they come in contact with these Islamic state people. But this must have predated Islam. It's, they go round and round and round and round, and then the head starts spinning and something happens up there. So dancing is there. In fact, the missionaries, the Protestant missionaries, went to Africa and they converted people, but they converted them, but instead of going to the church and being very sober, they'd start singing and dancing, and they thought, well, that's not very good. You're supposed to be very solemn in church. But the African people, they naturally, when they think of religion, they think of singing and dancing, which seems like it could be a good opportunity for spreading the Sankirtan movement there. So Srila Prabhupada describes about how we come to dance when the mind is purified, when the mind is absorbed in Krishna. He wrote in a purport in the fourth canto, there is an English proverb that says, the face is the index of the mind. If one is angry, his anger is immediately expressed in his face. Generally speaking, it's difficult. If someone's angry, it is possible to not show it, to try not to show it, but it may come out, just like Brahma was angry and he tried to hold his anger in when the four Kumaras refused to marry, but it popped out in the form of Rudra. His anger came out. Similarly, other mental states are reflected by the actions of the gross body. In other words, the actions of the gross body are reactions of the mental condition. The mind's activities are thinking, feeling, and willing. The willing portion of the mind is manifest by the activities of the body. The conclusion is that by the activities of the body and senses, we can understand the condition of the mind. The condition of the mind is affected by past activities in the past body. When the mind is joined with a particular sense, it immediately becomes manifest in a certain way. For instance, when there is anger in the mind, the tongue vibrates so many maledictions. Similarly, when the mind's anger is expressed through the hand, there is fighting. When it is expressed through the leg, there is kicking. There are so many ways in which these subtle activities of the mind are expressed through the various senses. The mind of a person in Krishna consciousness also acts in a similar way. The tongue chants Hare Krishna, the Maha Mantra. The hands are raised in ecstasy, and the legs dance in Krishna consciousness. These symptoms are technically called Ashta Sattvic Vikar. Sattvic Vikar is transformation of the mental condition in goodness, or sometimes transcendental ecstasy. Chanting means that we are calling to Krishna to engage in His service. And engage in His service means we assist Him in what He likes to do, in what He wants. And what Krishna likes to do more than anything is to dance with His devotees. And Prabhupada said, when you chant Krishna, Hare Krishna, actually the fact Krishna is dancing on your tongue by sound vibration. So if we're actually chanting purely, then Krishna is dancing on our tongue. So there is ethics, there is morality, there are rules and regulations. We have to raise our consciousness, we have to come to a higher level by following strictly all the rules and regulations. Otherwise, it's not that just, okay, let's all just dance and join, become gopis. It's not such a, it's a very, very high level. And we have to follow the process, step by step. But that step by step will eventually bring us to that platform. That's what it's meant for. It's not meant that we should always remain in the lower stage. And again, that doesn't mean that we should try to artificially, prematurely jump to the higher stage. But bhakti yoga is meant for purification, to allow us to come closer and closer and closer and closer to Krishna. So as soon as we begin bhakti yoga, we start to become closer to Krishna. We're away from Krishna and we start to get linked with Him. Yoga means linking. So in this Kali Yuga, Nama Sankirtan, glorification of the Holy Name, is the Yuga Dharma, the method of performing devotional service, and the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra especially. And it's part of the process to dance. Now, we may not feel like it all the time, but Srila Prabhupada always encouraged His disciples to dance. Even in Bombay, some of the devotees, it was very difficult in the early days, and some of the devotees, they'd have to go early in the morning into Bombay to try to meet some officer, to get some signature so they could, to authorize them to do some work, and sometimes they'd have to go day after day, waiting outside his office. He'd say, come tomorrow, come tomorrow. And they would just get discouraged, and they would come back all tired, and they'd take a bath and stand in the kirtan and look worn out. And Prabhupada, there's one instance where he told the devotee, you should dance in the kirtan, even if you feel discouraged, you dance. So even as a kind of sadhana, we can dance. So Prabhupada's is Krishna's representative. He's inviting us on behalf of Krishna to dance, to join the devotees, all the devotees, in dancing with Krishna. Krishna, he loves to dance, and we do also. That is, Jivesh Rup Hoy Krishna Nitya Das. We are eternal servants of Krishna. We are His part and parcels. He loves to dance. We do also. So Dancing is the ultimate expression of the happiness which is natural in Krishna consciousness. It's a happy state. At the same time, we should know that the dancing, although it definitely makes us feel blissful, but it's meant for the pleasure of Krishna. So we should always remember that and say, not invent all kinds of strange dances. Dance, as Prabhupada showed us, dance in the style of that our acharyas have given us, following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna, who came to this world as a devotee to relish the pleasure of being a devotee and to distribute the chanting of the holy names, dancing. In this regard, there are a few verses from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat regarding the dancing of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he invites us all to join in. So this first one is the order given to him by Ishvara Puri, his guru, at the time of initiation. Nacha gao bhakta shange kara shankitan Krishna nama upadeshi tara sarvajam. He told him, first, he told him, dance, sing, perform sankirtan, congregational chanting in the association of devotees, and by instructing everyone about Krishna nam, the name of Krishna, you deliver everyone. Now, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, what is the effect of them? Chaitanya Goshaya Lila Eto Shabhav Tribhuva Nache Gai Paya Premobhav. It's the very nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes that, being influenced by them, the whole universe dances, sings, and attains loving feelings for Krishna. Then, I didn't write down the Bengali for some of these. So the Ashtashatvik Vikar, the transformations, perspiration of transformations of ecstasy in pure love of Krishna, perspiration, trembling, standing on the end of one's bodily hairs, tears, faltering voice, fading complexion, madness, melancholy, patience, pride, joy and humility. These are various natural symptoms of ecstatic love of Godhead, which causes a devotee to dance and float in an ocean of transcendental bliss while chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Describing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu while he was on the way to Mathura, sometimes he would stop in different places, where villages where people were living, and it's described there that he would give the people, wherever he stopped, he would give them the holy name of Krishna and love of Krishna and make them dance. So this is very much part of his movement. Krishna himself, why does he dance? Krishna re na chai prema, bhakti re na chai, apane na chai, tine na chai ektai. It's one of these less known but very beautiful verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prem, love of Krishna, makes Krishna dance. He himself is dancing, being impelled by the bliss of love. And prema makes the devotees also dance. So they're both under the control of... And prema also dances. And so the three of them all dance together. So Krishna is inviting us to join his eternal dance. If we don't dance with Krishna, then we have to dance as the puppet of some master in this material world. Then we have to dance in 84 like species of life. But that's not a very pleasurable dance. So We have the choice. We can stand aloof or we can join in. We can keep our distance from Krishna. No, I don't dance. No, I'll be very good and moral and not dance. But then we miss the whole purpose of life. And Ashadadhana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Aprapya Malnivartate Mrityu Sansara Vatmani. If we don't have faith in this, then we fall again into the repeated process of birth and death. So here we are. We're in this material world. We're in doubt, anxiety, confusion, suffering in so many ways. And Krishna, He doesn't just liberate us. People often ask us, oh, you're doing bhakti, so you'll get moksha. They think you do. But Krishna does. He's not just, okay, folks, you're suffering. All right, I'll deliver you. He doesn't just deliver us from suffering. He offers to us to come and join him in the highest blissful ecstasy of chanting and dancing eternally with him in the spiritual world. So it's up to us. We're suffering on and on and on and on, birth after birth after birth after again and again and again. Now's the chance. Dance while you can in this life, and then you can go to dance with Krishna eternally. While you have strength in your body, go on dancing. There comes a time in everyone's life when the body becomes just too old and it doesn't dance. Of course, you can dance mentally, but as long as you can, as long as the body has strength and life, dance for Krishna, and then go to the spiritual world and dance within there also. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any question or comment about this, please? Yeah. All the gopis become attracted, yes.
So at the same
thing, gopas would also hear that. Well, maybe they didn't. They're all fast asleep after being in the forest all day with Krishna. Remember that, you see, you're trying to be very, applying all the rules of physics and biology, but it doesn't apply in Krishna's pastimes. It all works under Yoga Maya. She orchestrates it all herself. So those here who are meant to hear. Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, actually it's from the Bhagavatam, that all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, after working hard all day, they would sleep very soundly at night. But the gopis, they didn't sleep because they're feeling such separation from Krishna. Those gopis, the elder gopis like Yashoda, they would sleep. So don't bring the laws of physics and biology and all this and try to understand Krishna Leela. Yeah.
What are the arguments we can
do? Oh, there are many more arguments. You've got them all listed from Prabhupada. This is another approach. This is actually loosely based on an essay which I came across. It's not all my original speculation here, someone else's. But yeah, anyway. We can work out morality without religion. Well, the religionist's base is there's no absolute standard. If you say everything is all chemicals, then there's no need. Then there's no morality anyway, because if the body is just a combination of chemicals, so what does it matter if you chop their head off? It's just reorganizing some chemicals. That's all. So there's no meaning to morality. Unless we accept that people are more than chemicals.
But what happens is everyone, all these kind of different groups, they're arguing with each other. They'll film some discussion and then they'll edit it, so they won't show. They'll just show what part looks good for them. Someone last time was in Bhopal, and I spoke with some Muslims, and then afterward one young man came out to me and spoke with me in English, and I said to him that there are contradictions in the faith literature. And he said, oh, there are? He was surprised. He was trying to show that there are contradictions. I said, yeah, there are. So he wanted to get the video recording of that, but probably he's just going to show it with that much and not any further explanation. Afterward I looked up, pretty obvious there are going to be contradictions in the Quran also, apparent contradictions. Therefore there's a tradition to explain those contradictions. But they'll just take it, oh, there are contradictions. So like that. Honesty in debate is very rare. Even in our ISKCON, people, they don't try to understand this, they just take anyway. Hare Krishna. Yeah.
I have understood surrender to be following instructions.
Surrender means to follow instructions. Actually, the term, there are two words which are generally, well, there's sharan, sharanagati, which means taking shelter, and ashraya, which is a very similar word. And there's also prapatti, which means submitting oneself. There are other atmanivedana, which again means submitting oneself. So all these terms Srila Prabhupada has summarized in the English word surrender. Following instructions, yeah, that's what it means. But the essence of it is to completely give oneself for the benefit of the other. So that may require some intelligence. In some cases, in many cases, you may not have a particular instruction to follow in a certain instance. Then you have to consider what is the essence of all the instructions and how to apply it in that situation. Sometimes one may break the rule, a lower rule, to fulfill a higher rule. As in the case of Govinda, the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who had to walk over his body so that he could get in the room to massage him. So, you don't walk over the body of your guru. But he had to massage him, so he had to decide to break one rule or the other. So he walked over the body to massage his body. So what's the question? Surrender means following instructions. That's the first thing to be learned. And then as one becomes more understanding, then he learns also in which circumstances he can and should violate the letter of the law in order to fulfill the spirit of the law. Gopis, they're not on the platform of dharma, of mundane dharma at all. It doesn't pertain to them whatsoever. It only appears to pertain to them for the sake of enriching the pastimes. But they're far, far beyond the platform. Mundane dharma is to be followed so that we can regulate our lives and regulate our senses and regulate our desires so that we can become purified and take to Krishna consciousness and fully surrender to Krishna. It's far beyond the platform of what is right and what is wrong in this world. These things have to be understood very carefully. There are those who criticize that Krishna doesn't follow the rules of this world. There are others who say, oh, Krishna doesn't understand the rules of this world, therefore they're completely unimportant. No, they are important as long as we're in this world. But they, ultimately, devotees have nothing to do with the worldly dharma. Ultimately, on the spiritual platform, they have nothing to do with this. But as long as we're in this world, it's required to follow that. For us, for the gopis, in that situation, not. Not required. Not only not required, but their perfection was in not following it. Hare Krishna. Arya Patha, the path of the Aryas. Well, in Vedic culture, there are Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. And the Brahmanas, they're considered the Arya Sreshta. They're the pinnacle. They're the best. They're the model for everyone to aspire for. Not that one should imitate them. And Arya, yeah, that is generally applied to the caste, the three higher, especially to the Brahmanas, also to the Kshatriyas, as we find in Bhagavad Gita, Vaishyas also. We find there's in South India somewhere, isn't it? There's the Arya Vaishya Samaj. Is it in South India? Mm-hmm. Where is that? Bangalore? Maybe spread all over, huh? All over India, is it? Mostly I've seen. They have their Kalyana Mandapams here and there. Hare Krishna. Arya, that definition is given there in Manu Sanghita, is the people who live in Brahmavarta, the land between the Yamuna and the Ganga. But then if the proper behavior is followed by others also, that's supposed to be the ideal. Other things are given in the land where the black, the Krishna Mriga, are seen like this. It may have been at that time. Now between the Ganga and Yamuna is a very dangerous place actually, many of the places. But at that time it was considered to be the best place. Hare Krishna. So some devotees had questions, various questions. So if anyone wants, they can write down questions, and then one day we can have a question and answer session in the morning on various topics.